I'm pleased to welcome you to the new GTLD program, Global Consultation and Outreach Hong Kong. This is an ICANN event with the local host, Internet Society Hong Kong. May I take this opportunity to express our gratitude to the following not-for-profit organizations for the voluntary support in promoting the event. These organizations include Asian Domain Name Dispute Resolution Center, COMTIA, Hong Kong International Arbitration Center, Hong Kong Internet Service Providers Association, Hong Kong Association of Interactive Marketing, Hong Kong Internet Information Technology Federation, Hong Kong Wireless Technology Industry Association. Throughout the conference, there is wireless connection to the Internet. You will also receive a kit of printed materials with the agenda, some fact sheets, presentation handout, with all the presentations available online. You'll also receive a feedback sheet where you can fill in and leave it to the registration desk or to any one of our ICANN staff. Throughout the conference, if you need any assistance, our ICANN staff will be here to help you. Our ICANN staff, thank you. We'll also have Q&A sessions. You can raise your question in the Q&A sessions. Please feel free to ask your questions in Chinese as we will have translators to translate your questions into Chinese. If you would prefer to use our chat room, please feel free because you will have access to our chat room via internet. May I now welcome Charles to you. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of the Internet Society Hong Kong, I would like to welcome all of you for being here. And in fact, some of you sitting all the way over there, you might, you know, if you like, you can move over here even though there's a screen over there so you can be closer to the speakers. Internet Society Hong Kong is the Hong Kong chapter of the Global Internet Society, and we devote ourselves to the promotion of Internet usage, Internet governance issues, and so on. So we're very happy this time that we are the local host for ICANN to host this event here. It's the first time ICANN has held an event in Hong Kong, and we're very glad that we have the opportunity to work with them. Any of you here, I think you know why you are here, but for some of you who might be still wondering about it, I think I just want to tell you that you have a great day ahead of you, and you are going to be hearing a lot, and we have a very compact program, very packed program, in terms of the material and information that our speakers are going to be sharing with you. And what we're going to be here talking about, or ICANN is going to present to you, is mainly really about what's on the backdrop here. The introduction of the generic top-level domains and the internationalized domain name systems. That's something that the Internet community all over the world has been waiting for and has been deliberating for a long time. And finally, hopefully early next year, we'll see it coming. So this is actually the fourth event in a series of consultation and outreach events by ICANN after they had been in Sydney, London, and New York, and now Hong Kong. And then they will move on to Abu Dhabi for the last meeting. And so we're very happy that Hong Kong is actually the only East Asian city that ICANN has chosen to do this introduction in. And we have and when I look at the registration today, we had a very diverse list of people and background, including people coming from all over Asia and indeed the world, and also folks from the legal business background, telecommunications, IT, and academic, government, and so on, and users. So we are going to be... I think the issue that we have to deal with in the proceeding today is that many of you probably have different background and knowledge and exposure to the issues about ICANN and the GTLD and IDN programs. So hopefully you will bear with us that some of the materials will be a little bit more on the introductory side, but certainly you can ask any questions at any level of depth and particular to your interest. At our very frequent Q&A sessions at the end of every part of our program. So Finally, I want to take the opportunity to introduce the ICANN team who are here today before we start. First of all, well, actually, I'll save Doug for last because Doug will be our first speaker. Let me first introduce the other ICANN speakers here today. Carla Valenti. Carla is the Director of Communications and Product Service of ICANN. Liz is the Senior Policy Counselor for ICANN. And Monica Konings. Monica is the Policy Director of ICANN. And also, this is going to be testing me, Safi Hoher. He's the Manager of Regional Relations of Australasia and Asia Pacific of ICANN, and also Pam Little. Pam is the Senior Director of Asia Pacific Contractual Compliance. Welcome to all of you, and let me finally introduce our first speaker. He's going to give us an introduction to ICANN, and we're glad to have the COO of ICANN, Mr. Doug Brandt. Doug joined ICANN in January of 2007 in the newly created role of COO, Chief Operating Officer. And he has the executive oversight of operational services, including IANA, support of contracted parties, registries and registrars, contractual compliance, policy development support, and major project initiatives. And he's also responsible for the internal business operation functions, including also the finance, IT, human resources. He's also responsible for managing ICANN's strategic plan and operating plan, budget planning, reporting, and metrics. So let us all give Doug a warm Hong Kong welcome and give the podium to Doug.
So is my mic on? Yes, it is. Thank you very much, Charles, for that introduction. And I will try to catch us up on schedule to get to our next speaker. So first of all, I say with some embarrassment, this is my first time visiting Hong Kong. I've been many times in northern China, in Japan, but I've not yet visited the city. It's an absolutely beautiful city. And so let me thank you all for hosting us here, and thank you for joining us this morning. Welcome. I really appreciate the fact that there's so many people interested in finding out what's going on with ICANN. Can we queue up my presentation, please? I'll just echo what Charles said. I don't know if it would be possible. Could we get a show of hands, perhaps, of people who know ICANN very well? How many people here know ICANN very well? So the challenge will be, thank you very much, so I would say it's about a third of the room. The challenge will be, on the one hand, we have people who know ICANN extremely well, and on the other, I think we have people who are quite new to this whole ICANN experience. So today, we're covering a lot of ground. We're touching many different subjects of ICANN. And I think from an ICANN staff point of view, our hope is to listen respectfully and carefully to questions and comments as they come in. Our sort of goal for you would be not to give everyone a doctoral degree in how ICANN works, but rather to give you a taste of all of the issues that are going on within ICANN today so that you may choose later to pursue an interest and actually participate in the ICANN process on some issue that may be of interest to you. So can we have the next slide, please? I think we've covered a lot of this. What's not on this from an agenda point of view is I'm very excited right after I speak to hear Pindar Wang's keynote speech. And then at the end of the day, also I'm very interested in this panel discussion on internet governance and including what's going on in Asia. My goal over the next few minutes is to introduce ICANN to you, sort of who is ICANN, what do we do? Later in the day, I think just right after Pindar speaks, we'll be... thank you so much. Right after Pindar speaks, we'll be covering what's going on in the new GTLD program. By the way, my background before joining ICANN was in the technology industry, specifically in networking. And I thought in networking, we had more acronyms, more letters than in any other area till I joined ICANN. So if we use an acronym that you don't know, please raise your hand and say, explain what this acronym is. We're going to be covering an introduction to the top-level domain program and what we're calling four overarching issues. This is just a way of saying some of the key issues that remain to be resolved before the new GTLD program proceeds. We want to share the latest on internationalized domain names, and then in the afternoon, give you a taste of what ICANN policy work is all about. So really, from an ICANN point of view, be talking both about implementation, putting new GTLDs in the root, internationalized domain names in the root. And we'll also be talking about some of our policy topics. And the policy topics are really where you may choose to engage further. Good. I thought I may have double-clicked there, but I think we're okay. So what am I going to give you in terms of introduction to ICANN? Just a little bit of context for internet users, domain name marketplace, what the world is that ICANN operates in. A little bit about ICANN structure, who and how people participate in ICANN, and then ICANN in 2009 and beyond, sort of where our focus is right now, but really more a focus on today. Where is ICANN today? And I think this might play nicely into the next set of comments. Move over here. So this map was produced by University of Sheffield, sort of a funny looking geography of the world. And it was done in 1990, which from internet point of view is almost prehistory at this point, so almost 20 years ago. And what it tries to do is represent the geography of each company by the penetration, by the amount of internet usage in the country. Not surprisingly, 20 years ago, United States shows up as a big blob on that map, and some parts of the world, South America, Africa, and Asia, certainly in terms of its population, is really underrepresented there. Fast forward 17 years, and that picture looks quite different. And I think a theme of today that we're going to constantly be talking about is the internet has changed. It's not the internet of 20 years ago. The issues have changed. The people who are participating have changed. And so now the question is, how do we engage that change in the way ICANN and other parts of internet coordination work? And it's really, when you think that the amount of internet usage has grown from tens of millions to hundreds of millions to billions, and at the same time, the proportion of that happening in Asia is ever bigger, it's a pretty stark change in what's been happening in the internet. So what is ICANN? ICANN is yet another acronym. It stands for Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. And the mission of ICANN is actually pretty simple. It's to coordinate unique identifiers on the internet. So what does that mean? It's about names, it's about numbers, and sort of a hidden part of what ICANN does is about parameters. So ICANN's involvement in names is in two ways. Top-level domains. So top-level domain is what's on the right-hand side of the dot, .com, .org, .net, and ICANN works closely with people who provide those names. Additionally, ICANN works with and with country code managers, .cn, .in, .tw, .kr. Those country code managers participate in ICANN as well and deal with some of the top global policy implications of working at the country code level. In terms of numbers, IP addressing ranges are delegated to ISPs through something called a regional internet registry, APNIC for this part of the world. At the top of that, ICANN, through its IANA function, allocates addresses out, and that's another important part of what ICANN does. Clearly, it's an issue area right now for the global internet as IPv4 address space is just on the horizon, really, of running out. The third area I'm not going to go into right now, but we'll just say that IETF and other technical organizations ask ICANN to be a central repository, you could say a central phone book of storing certain information, and that's another function that ICANN does. So that's really the coordination function. An important aspect of that, though, is also the bottom-up policy development, and I'm going to say what we mean by bottom-up, the processes with multiple stakeholders that allow us to build the appropriate structure around this coordination of unique identifiers. What are the principles that ICANN operates under? It's number one, that there be stability in terms of how this identifier system is handled, and overall root zone management be stable. A second important point, and I think we'll hit on this multiple times today, is the notion of promoting competition and choice. That's something ICANN has done previously for these generic names, .com, .org, .net, at the registrar level, and as part of the new GTLD program, we're talking about more competition at the registry level. It's multi-stakeholder. Our new CEO, ICANN got a new CEO about 3 weeks ago, and he gave a speech in front of the ICANN meeting. One of the things he said is, sometimes ICANN sounds like a cacophony, a noisy environment, lots of frank and tough discussion. To him, he says, I hear a symphony. It is the many voices coming to make policy. And that's, in fact, this idea of ICANN incorporating government stakeholders, individual internet users, registries, registrars, the whole group of people who have an interest. And that the policy agenda for ICANN comes from the bottom up. So when we talk about new GTLD policy, for example, that's not something that was dictated by ICANN board or certainly by ICANN staff, but rather a policy that came up through one part of ICANN structure. And an absolutely core part of who we are is that ICANN be focusing on the global nature of the internet use and internet users. Just briefly to talk about what does this marketplace look like? And we throw these words out, and even in an all-native English-speaking audience, this can get very confusing. A registry is effectively a central database, almost a phone book, of names and numbers. So there's a .com registry that's run by VeriSign. That registry takes second-level registrations, like Amazon.com, and the registry, VeriSign, keeps track of, for this name, Amazon, what's the address? That's what a registry does. It's sort of like a central phone book function. Registrars provide those names out to individual end users. So you can think of that from a business point of view, almost like a retail channel and a manufacturer. A registry sort of is responsible for the names. The registrar works with end users to provide those names to end users. Of course, another really important part, maybe it's a little bit off the bottom of the slide, are registrants. All of us, and including me and probably many of you for business or personal use, who register names to have a identity on the internet. So what does that marketplace look like today? Today, and this data is quite current. This is from June 2009, a VeriSign industry brief. There's about 180 million domain names registered around the world. It's probably hard to see some of the trends from this kind of chart, but just a couple of interesting points. You'll see the bottom, the green parts of those bars are .com registrations. Those do represent the bulk of registrations still today. That's about close to 80 million registrations in .com. What's interesting, though, is that over the last few years, the growth in country code registries has actually slightly outpaced the growth in generic registries. And I think in large part, people are starting to relate to registries from a linguistic, cultural, geographic point of view, which is something that becomes also very important when we talk about generic top-level domains. Also, over the last couple of years, you may have noticed that .cn, the yellow part of that chart, has become the biggest country code registry just over the last few years. This is also sort of an interesting chart in that it talks about competition from a registrar point of view. When ICANN was founded, one of the key objectives of ICANN was to introduce registrar competition. And as a result of that, that is sort of competition among people who provide names to end users. There's been a pretty dramatic reduction in price, and these are looking at, I'm sure, .com names, but you can see the price going down from 50 to under 10 US dollars for .com registrations, really very closely linked to the upswing in opening up the market for registrars. So that's just a very brief look at sort of what this marketplace is. In terms of the internet ecosystem, I think a lot of people, when they come to talk about internet governance, are looking for, well, who really runs the internet anyway? And I think the strength of the internet is that it's this distributed system really without any single organization responsible for overall oversight. And ICANN is part of that ecosystem. You know, you've heard this morning that we partner closely with ISOC Hong Kong in terms of putting this event on, that different of these organizations have different issues. And ICANN sticks very closely to this notion of managing the unique identifiers while working broadly with a whole range of participants. And this is actually just a subset of the kinds of organizations we work with. It would also include RIRs, regional internet registries, and a wide variety of others. The ICANN community and the ICANN organization tries to reflect this bottom-up notion. And that's why we have sort of a complex organization chart here. But I briefly would like to point out a couple of aspects of this to you. You'll notice on the left-hand side, there's a part that talks about ICANN staff. And so you saw that there's about six of us whose full-time job we're paid to work at ICANN. When you say, what is ICANN? That is not the focus of what ICANN is. ICANN is this big thing which involves governments. And you can see there's a government advisory committee where we now have, I think, I'll try to look to an expert, but I think we have more than 80 governments actively participating in ICANN's government advisory committee. And then you see on the lower left-hand side, where it says ASO, GNSO, CCNSO, those are the policy-making bodies of ICANN. So that we have a CCNSO, that is the country code name supporting organization that makes policy for country codes. GNSO, that makes policy for generic names, and regional internet registries. Those are sort of the core policy-making functions, and we'd welcome anyone in the room to start participating in that policy-making. I'm going to go a little quicker because I think I'm running out of time, but just to briefly say, what's the ICANN community like? Well, you may not know it, but you're already part of the ICANN community. Really simply by coming to a meeting like this and asking questions, registering comments, et cetera, that is what ICANN is about. As I mentioned earlier, it tends to be a public debate that's spirited, sometimes very blunt. Part of that community, there's one formal part of that community, which is the contracts that ICANN has with registries and registrars. I'm from California. I'm a native English speaker, speak with an American accent. That is just one little part of what ICANN is. ICANN has as its aspiration at all times to be a global organization, and with that kind of a focus, it's in our basic bylaws. We have a multinational board. Whenever we have a board meeting, we have one next week, it'll be at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. for someone because it's really set around the world. And we certainly aspire to be multinational in all aspects of participation and accountable to the global internet. I'm not going to say a lot about this right now, how to participate, but you would be surprised at the amount of information that you can see on the ICANN website on all of the policy processes we're talking about. It's very, very detailed, available information. This event we're having today is being webcast around the world. I don't know how many people will participate today, but anyone globally that has internet access could be participating with us today and submitting questions for us to address. This afternoon when we talk about the policies, Liz Gaster will talk a little bit more about how to participate. I'm just going to hit this very quickly. What are the key evolving issues? Security and stability is clearly a big issue that ICANN is not uniquely responsible for, but we participate in. To the extent that you're aware of the Conficker virus, that was a very talked about security threat about 2 months ago. That turned out that was a DNS security threat, a names threat that ICANN was involved in. IDNs we'll talk about today. IPv4 to IPv6 migration is a key issue in active discussion at ICANN and work. New GTLDs, new top level domains. And I think I'll stop there. Just to say the point that ICANN is always changing, learning, growing, and we get that input from meetings like this. In terms of what our mission is, a big part of this mission for this year is competition and choice through this generic top-level domain program, expanding internationalized domains. If people have an interest, we're not going to specifically be talking about this today, but a major activity at ICANN right now is DNSSEC signing the route. That is, authenticating the root zone information so people can really trust it, and adding a key element of trust and security to the naming system. And then, you know, compliance and other core activities that people are looking for ICANN to deliver. I'll briefly flash up but not discuss the strategic plan objectives for ICANN this year. I will say, if that's an area of interest, what's in ICANN's strategic plan. We have that posted online. It's about a 10-page document and one of the most accessible documents ICANN has if you're interested in finding out more about ICANN. I will say, again, a constant theme of today is going to be seeking more Asian participation in ICANN. It's hard to measure, but I will say at ICANN's Sydney meeting that we had about just 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think we had more Chinese representation than we've ever had, and you know, it's more accessible in the region. ICANN's next meeting is October 25th through 30th, where 1,200 people, approximately, will come together to talk about all these issues ICANN is working on. It's geographically more accessible to the Asian region, and I think that would be an excellent opportunity for people who want to participate in that meeting. Those are some other upcoming meetings, and ICANN sort of runs its heartbeat of interaction with the community on these 3 times a year meetings. Please join us. So I'm in my introductory comments there. I think I'm going to be back on stage a couple times talking about new GTLDs and IDNs today. But again, just want to echo a welcome, and I'm very happy to be here this morning. Thank you.
Doug, let me introduce our next our main keynote speaker in the morning for you. ICANN is an international organization, and we always hope that there will be more participation from Hong Kong. But indeed, Hong Kong was there when ICANN all started a long time ago, in the last millennium. There was the first vice chairman of ICANN was actually my good friend from Hong Kong, Pinder Wong. He's going to give us his introduction keynote about, I guess, his vision or what things past, present, and future about ICANN. From his point of view, Pinder, of course, as many of you know, has been one of the founders, the main founder of the internet industry, ISP industry in Hong Kong a long time ago. And ever since, he has been very active in participation of all the international internet related activities, including Internet Society Global. So I'll give the time over to Pinder.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Charles, and good morning. Charles gave me a very difficult topic to talk on. He said, I want to talk about a future of the internet naming system. That's a pretty big topic. My concern, my sort of paraphrase of that title, which really is my response to it, is, are we going back to gateways? That's the idea I want you to hold to in mind. Are we at a time now that we're moving back to an internet? Those listed me as ICANN's first vice chairman. I prefer to list myself as an internet volunteer because that really is the spirit in which the internet was developed. And where I think we are today, in terms of what's facing the future growth of the internet, is that we need a lot more participation, that's a bit of Doug mentioned, in order to move the internet forward. And I hope we can explain why. So, big title, big day. Welcome, Doug, for those he's first to Hong Kong. I'm made in Hong Kong. For those of you who have been to Hong Kong, welcome back. I've also got some, well, I will go hopefully modest goals. As a keynote, I saw my role as trying to set some context and some thoughts for the day, for your work ahead of you for the next several hours. Hoping to stimulate some discussion. I want to do that by sharing with you some of my observations over the years, share with you some speculations, and some what I would call travel tips as you start your journey in this process. My goal is very much similar to Doug's. I want to encourage your participation in the process, not just in ICANN, but many of the iStar organizations and other groups that help build the internet. So, speaking of travel, I just got back to Hong Kong myself. I do my laundry here. 1 week ago today, I was on the plane with my family coming back from Los Angeles. And so I opened the Financial Times. I don't know how many of you have seen this article. Dot organization, yeah? So the Financial Times, my daily joy, mentions imminent liberalization. Yeah? tug of war over cyber gatekeeper, showdown between ICANN and trademark owners. Well, it's good to see that some things haven't changed. Over the last 10 years, that in some sense has been the staple of ICANN. So my question is, in Yokohama, I was very happy to support the view of the community then that we should have new GTLDs. This is back in 2000 at the ICANN Yokohama meeting when the board voted on that. I was very happy to support the community's view that that should indeed be the case. So in some sense, we started the ball rolling in 2000. We've had two iterations, and now, according to this document and ICANN's, we're looking at perhaps extra 500 names. Who knows? But certainly more than a double digit. Okay. But some very important things have changed. A lot of the information now is on ICANN's website. It's multilingual. There's a lot of people who are not engineers or politicians who participate in these processes. And I believe that these material changes make it very different this time around. This time around, I believe the game is changing, and I want to share with you why I believe so by sharing with you what I think the important milestones have been over the last several years and those important milestones that we face in the next few years. So, from my view, the important milestones, for me, it was back in July 2003. When ICANN introduced the Quad A record, the IPv6 address record for Japan, the ccTLD for .jp and .kr. What that meant to me is that the IPv6, something that you hear more and more about, the addressing scheme for a much larger address space than IPv4, our current internet, that was its debut on the world stage. To me, that was a long time coming. That was a very big moment. Fast forwarding a little bit, last year, January, midterm review of this one of the agreements with the US government, the Joint Project Agreement, JPA, that was more or less ICANN going to the US government saying, look, you know, I'm big enough now, I've grown up, give me the car keys, or give me the plane keys. February of that year, full IPv6 connectivity, which didn't require an IPv4, because of, again, ICANN introducing Quad A records for six of the root name servers. What that meant was you could be pure IPv6 end-to-end, and that was, to me, again, a very big moment. As a Chinese, I could not help but be very proud of last year's Summer Olympics. As an engineer, I was even more proud because in many ways, that was the largest IPv6 showcase the world has ever seen. Not many people know that. One of these standards organizations, W3C, which Doug mentioned, introduced, in my view, a fundamentally and very significant standard. Those in Hong Kong are probably sick of me saying this, but RDFA, which enables the semantic web, I think is a game changer. It will change the way we search and find information, which I believe is really why we're here. We want to find information from the internet. June 2nd, fast forward this year, the PIR.org, the second largest domain where I used to serve on the board of .org, PIR, very happy to say that they were the first large-scale OpenTLD to sign their zone with something to make it hopefully safer, this DNS security which Doug mentioned. To me, that's significant. Why? Because it's being deployed. And obviously, Doug's mentioned the June 2nd appointment of Rod being the new CEO of ICANN. Now, other milestones have yet to come. How many of you are aware of September 2009? Okay, that's when ICANN is the joint project agreement is supposed to terminate, and ICANN is supposed to be released from some of its obligations. Some of you view that as an endpoint. I don't. I view that actually as a beginning. To me, it's actually not that significant, but I know many of you are concerned, so I put it up there. Now, any of you are aware of these two dates? June 24th, 2011, 2 years away. Any of you aware of 4th of April, 2012? Chehu, you should be aware. Okay. The reason why these are important is these are the expected dates that we will exhaust the existing IPv4 address space. The June 24th, 2011 is when the IANA, again, the IANA function performed by ICANN,
is expected to allocate or run out of unallocated address from the unallocated IPv4 address pool. And a few months thereafterwards, given the way the system works, on April 4th, 2012, the regional internet registries, such as APNIC in our part of the world, would also exhaust. So this month, coming back from the US, there's a space theme, yeah? 40 years ago, we landed on the moon. Houston, I think we have a deadline. Okay. That's something that ICANN is not really used to, but this is deadline I think is quite significant, and I expect some disruption. So, speaking of journeys, today's journey, well, you know, in that context, where are we, where are we going, why bother with this, what are we really trying to do, why is this so hard, and why after 10 years does it take ICANN to come and the community to work, and why is internationalized domain names, why can't they wait, why must we deploy that for our part of the world as soon as we can, and who decides? These are the questions that I thought would take us along the journey in this morning's keynote. And you know, for those of you who've just come to Hong Kong, probably prior before you got into Hong Kong, you probably read this. It's hot off the press, or so I was informed for those outside the region. From Forrester, July 21st, on Tuesday, over the next 5 years, the total number of people online to grow almost by double, 45%, right? To 2.2 billion people. Much of the growth occurring in this part of the world. 17% of the online population in China. Now, your chart about China, well, in 5 years' time, that's going to be 17%. What about places like India? Yeah. What about those who have not yet connected? What do they have to say about this? The thing that they also said in the Forrester report is an organization must understand the dynamics of the global shifting global online population. The nature of the game is changing. So where are we? To borrow Andy Grove's Only the Paranoid Survive. Are we at a strategic inflection point? Are we at a fundamental point where the game is going to change? The reason why I agreed to stand up here today is because I believe the answer is yes. I believe the game is about to change. Both from a technical perspective, the IPv4 address exhaustion issue, which I've mentioned, and also politically, from potentially the conclusion of the JPA. What next? Now, that's a period, in my view, that is going to be a period of maximum opportunity for everyone. It could also be, if one is to be pessimistic, a period of maximum risk. I'll paint a scenario for you. ICANN achieves independence from the JPA. 2 years down the line, the internet, as we know it, IPv4, starts to break because of exhaustion. Who's to blame, right? What's the issue? What can we do to solve it? Let's try to think of these issues as we move forward. So where are we going? I mentioned independence. That's independence in sort of the GPA context. I believe, in fact, as an engineer, I look at more at utility. To me, the major issue is not the politics. It's, in fact, that we continue to provide a useful namespace. To evolve the namespace, both, as I said, utility and also size. If only because of all the users that Forrester thinks are coming online and who I believe are coming online. At the same time, this issue of stability whilst trying not to break anything. And I think that's a fundamental paradox here, which I also want to address as we move forward. On the one hand, we try to innovate. And the second time, we can't break anything. Is the innovation model the right way of framing the issue? So why bother? Well, for those of you who helped build the internet, it's because we must. This is something, the internet culture, something very valuable, the open free culture, something that we must preserve. The other answers, I call in another category, because it depends. It depends because if you're in the business of names, which businesses that really didn't commercially exist 10, 15 years ago, because of ICANN, that's a multi-million dollar industry now. Obviously, they've got an interest for stability and continuing growth, because that's their business. If you are a new user who are coming online in country X, you want to make sure that there's space for you. Now, the DNS is currently the dominant identifier for the current internet access paradigm. Yeah, the laptop, wireless, or internet access, or your desktop at home. That's what I view as being the current internet access paradigm. And it's viewed to be, again, the prominent identifier for the future network, for IPv6 internet. Well, my question before I ask you is, are access paradigms changing? Okay, many of you access desktop, laptop browsers. How many of you have an iPhone? Okay, how many of you access the internet by a smart device, a wireless device? Many people in China, their first access to the internet is from their phone, not from a laptop. Similar in Japan. So isn't the internet access paradigm changing? I'll give you another example. I access the internet by pressing a button, right? And even the smartphone, you access the internet by pressing a button. Interesting technology is, in the future, do we access the internet by talking to it? If we access the internet by a different access methodology, does the relevance of the DNS continue? Is it still relevant? Do we foster this innovation? Do we hinder it because of our existing business interests? Do we help the baby being born? Or do we try something else? So in 2000, this is the, you can find this on the ICANN website, but here's a modification of, you know, I've tried to articulate what ICANN does, and this is my first attempt, what I call the old model. Back in 2000, I articulated ICANN is really trying to find a balance between the needs and wants of internet users or those who claim to represent them or speak on their behalf, if one can be found, with that of tomorrow, okay? That's finding this balance is very, very tricky. So what's success? Oh, sorry, what's failure? The failure is this thing about without breaking global interoperability. So we have existing people who use the network with existing needs. We have people coming in, future technologies, future innovations. Can we migrate from where we are to where we need to be without breaking the internet? That, to me, then, was failure. What's success? Well, the success of the internet keeps growing. It keeps growing in a way that's fairly transparent. The end user doesn't notice. Now, with the address space of IPv4, today's internet running out, in a few years, it'll be very difficult for us not to notice if we don't do something today. Now, I retired from internet. I stood down from the public internet registry at 3 a.m. on November 5th, 2006. I needed to spend more time with my family. My son was just born at that time. I had 10 years of blood, sweat, and tears in internet volunteering, and I needed to spend more time with my wife and my kids. This is my son, Nico. And what are we really trying to do here? And you've heard of the phrase internet governance. That was really sort of mentioned, and it's been a political issue for several years now. I would argue that we're not really here talking on the internet, we're talking about internet governance. I believe that's the wrong paradigm. I believe that's the wrong approach. I believe that's the wrong mindset of dealing with the internet. Now, with apologies to John Postel and others, I'll overload the IP term. IP for some of you means intellectual property. For me, it means internet protocol. I want to introduce yet another term, what I call internet parenting. Because I believe the parenting model and the parenting approach to the internet, something which I believe is almost organic, is probably the right model and the right approach, and I'll explain why. So why is the DNS evolution so hard? Well, basically because it mirrors us. It mirrors the age-old problems with communication. I don't think there's anything, and I'll explain what that is. But what is this age-old problem with communication? Well, first, when we communicate, or when your child is born, the first thing you learn to do is to communicate with them. You use two senses, use your mouth and your ears. You speak to them. The first thing that with that technology that came along was we invented the telephone. Why? Because we could speak. Later on, we teach them to read and write, using their hands and eyes. The internet extended our eyes and our minds across the whole world. But that came much later. So these are communication paradigms. As we all know, the internet relies on numbers, these things called IP addresses, and IPv4 addresses below, Hong Kong SuperNet, the ISP I founded in 1993, and Creative Commons. Numbers, for some people, are very difficult to remember. So for ease of use, we give them a name. And right here, we are concerned with domain names. Domain names help us remember where we want to go. So it's a usability issue. But what's in a name? So what's the first thing you do when your child is born? Or what was the first thing your parents do when you were born? They give you a name, yeah? Maybe there's lots of ceremony, maybe there's lots of research, etc. But they give you a name, they give you a label, you know, in an engineering sense. But in the real world, you are not your name. How many, Yip-Sing Wong, I don't know. Anyone surname Wong here? Or David, John, okay. In this namespace, we have a collision. But I know that you're not me because we have the physical meat space. We are different in spite of the fact that we share the same name. Names also have semantics. sex, triple X, blue. They have all sorts of social connotations. Green, what does it mean to be green? Names have semantics. And anyone who knows who have had children, when your kids start to communicate, does it sometimes create conflict? They have disagreements when they start communicating. So in many ways, the ICANN process mirrors these things because we're dealing with names. Nothing new. But in order for communication to take place, there must be trust. I have to know that I'm communicating with you, who I intend to. It would be very strange if I pick up my phone and I call my mother and I speak to someone completely different. Just as it's very strange for the proverbial Alice to try and communicate, and then the issue of the internet today, in terms of cybercrime, etc., is, are you sure you're talking to Bob? Do you trust the communication? Third thing is that you must desire to communicate. When you want to communicate, is that both parties have to agree. Unfortunately, sometimes the case is that I want to communicate with you, okay? Bob wants to communicate with Alice, but Alice wants nothing to do with Bob. Okay. Spam, right? Everyone receives spam, yeah? People want to communicate with you, but you don't want to communicate with them. There needs to be the desire to communicate. And there's no corruption of the communication. In other words, what I say, you hear, and it's not misunderstood. But in some instances, they are. There's the proverbial case that if you go to Shanghai and you're in the hotel and you say, well, you talk to someone and say, I need an iron. Does that mean I need an iron? Or does that mean I need a lover in Mandarin? Or alternatively, please follow me, Johnny. Your parents told you to come with me. Okay, all the domain name hijacking and in-between tax and cybersecurity issues could in some sense be characterized as a corruption, a man in the middle of the communication. So why is this so hard? Well, you know, we talk about stability, and there's the other issue in many ways of, you know, trying not to make mistakes. Don't break the internet, don't break the DNS. My question is that actually reasonable? Is that reasonable to ask for that? It's been 10 years now. Is that reasonable? Why? Because I believe in the parenting model. The parenting model, as any parents know, is that parenting involves making mistakes. You make mistakes. You learn to be a parent as you go along. Innovation, anyone involved with technology development recognizes and celebrates mistakes. And mistakes, making them hopefully small mistakes, is in many ways how we learn. So really, what's the priority here? Yeah, we're going to introduce potentially 500 new GTLDs, okay? Is preventing failure at all costs for existing users our first and most important priority? You'll discuss that later on this afternoon. Yeah. Or really, should it be, is the model really that ICANN needs to look at models where we detect failure early and take active steps to that these failures are small? Is that the better model? Don't try and prevent breaking, but just make sure that you can pick up the pieces very quickly once it occurs. Now, IDNs, why can't they wait? Well, for those of you, the analogy I like to use is your mobile phone. I mean, most of us use the address book function. Yeah, we don't remember everyone's number. We just put it in our address book. So imagine your address book in Martian, with a space theme that we have. In other words, a language that you're familiar with. You could probably still use your mobile phone, but it probably wouldn't be very easy. And that's the situation the rest of the world faces in terms of the DNS right now. They can be first-class citizens in many ways through the introduction of IDN. So remember Forrester, the Forrester Report, all these billions of people coming online. Can they participate in a way for all mankind? Again, that space thing. So, but in the way that we deploy that, and in the 10 years that we've seen all the issues with so-called Roman domain names or English domain names, okay, the ccTLD hacking, et cetera, in introducing all these names, are we polluting or are we multiplying the issues in other spaces by doing so? Are we actually handicapping those people who we're trying to help by actually doing so? I don't know. So these new GTLDs, in many ways, that sign-in is what I call this big bang, right? I think we're approaching the big bang if this is proceeding, and that's great in many ways. Go, please. I'm not saying stop. I mean, proceed with all diligence and speed. But manage, as we know from the financial sector, manage the black swan downside risk. Don't shut it away, think it won't happen. Recognize it, manage it. And here's the example of the old gateways. Okay, before the web, we used to have lots of different email systems. And in those days, we had email gateways. Right. Any of you members of BitNet or FidoNet? Oh, okay. Well, we're dating ourselves here. CCmail, et cetera, et cetera. What you had to do to get your email to ensure to arrive at that destination, you had to tag on various these strings, the apostrophe and the percentage, to route your email. Now, my question, as I said at the very beginning, is are we actually in evolving the internet, moving back to gateways? One of the solutions that's proposed to elongate the utility and usefulness of IPv4 is introduce what's called a carrier-grade network address translator. What that does is, how many of you, I think nearly everyone here uses what, private addresses at home? Okay, 192.168, NET10 in your home network. Well, you use a private address, not the public address, and what may happen is ISPs may have to use some form of NAT so that we can conserve the space. So our green gateways coming back. If so, should they be also in blue or red? Think about that. As I said, this is my most important slide. If there's one slide you remember, that'd be this. I think the future is there somewhere. Question is, do we want to have gateways? Most importantly, are we playing the right game? Now, there are those of you here who are in the business of naming, who benefit from what ICANN has achieved over the last 10 years. There are those of you who are actually in the business of finding. Now, in the old days, what you used to do is direct navigation, which is you didn't know the site, so you guessed. You guessed the name, plus .com, some sort of a direct name. Any of you use direct naming right now? How many of you, the first thing you bring up is some search engine, you type in what you want, and then you click? How many of you do that? So the way that we're using the internet is changing. The relevance of the domain name as the first thing you use is changing. The utility of the domain name is changing. Why? Because the way we use it and the way that we access the internet. That's something I talked about before. So will that mean that we are basically, when the world moves towards IPv4 and v6 together, will it mean that we have to rely on search gateways to make sure that the internet, the information from both sides can be found? In other words, do we save the golden goose? And to save the golden goose, are we accidentally killing it? Are we slowly killing it? Don't know. I don't know. I really don't. And hopefully you can help me answer that question as you move forward, not just today, but in your work. So in summary, I think the model here is really a parenting model, not a governance model. There's a panel discussion at the very end of the day talking about internet governance. I believe our roles are to educate, guide, and nurture an independent internet for which we are all responsible. Not necessarily governments, not your technology vendor. All of us use the internet. We co-create the internet by our very use of NATs at home, et cetera, et cetera. I think we're all responsible. So really, in a parenting model, do you focus on preventing bad behavior, preventing cybercrime and the like? Or do you foster and spend your energies on focusing good behavior? The reason I mention this is because you have a potential for a new space with the new GTLDs. A lot of concern with trademark issues on bad behavior. Well, can we start off with a clean space so that we can promote good behavior? Do we regulate or administer because we can, because we're actually able to do this, or because we should? Should failure, in my view, should be an option. It should be managed, though, expected and planned for. So please keep the internet open, that's my request, if possible, to both people, those who have yet to come on, and also to innovation. So no gateways. But who decides all of this? Who decides to keep the internet going? Is it ICANN? Is it the US government? Is it your government, the United Nations? Is it the man? No, I believe it's you do. I believe you do. By your very use, by expressing your beliefs and values through your use and co-creation of the internet and by participating in forums such as those today. I believe your internet needs you. We need more volunteers, in my view, especially from the Asia Pacific. Why? Because the growth is going to be here, according to Forrester. We need informed participation. You need to educate yourselves to participate in some meaningful way. The mechanisms are there. ICANN is here, for example. And could be prepared to contribute substantively. We need the best and brightest because we don't know the answers. We don't know the solutions. The internet is a work in process. It's not something that's ossified and static. It evolves. In my view, we need to minimize the effects of failure by early detection and recovery. Second most important slide. Well, 20%, there's another survey, says in 10 years' time, the internet's going to be responsible for 20% of the world's greenhouse gases. Please plan your use and power down. IP address exhaustion, well, don't complain how to fix it. Reduce and recycle IPv4 addresses, please, if you're not using them. Plant an IPv6 network. What I mean by that is move to IPv6. Don't procrastinate. Don't think about it. Just do it. Thank you. Some resources. Questions?
You mentioned gateway at a number of instances without qualification. Do you mean gateway at the technical level or the management level? And what do you mean by green, red, and blue as applied to gateways?
Sure. The question is, what do I mean by gateways? Is it technical or managerial or even political? I mean all three. All three. Gateways, in many ways, you could view as a mental construct, something that you don't want to go through because you're prevented from doing so. You could prevent yourself from doing so. Self-censorship is an example. But we have free flow of information in Hong Kong, which is very, very good. Green Dam, right? This whole issue into China, right? That's what, a gateway of sorts, perhaps. Blue gateways, well, that's the whole issue to do with we have to protect you, therefore we have to cut you off. Green gateways, well, I leave that to you. These are just, again, in some sense, metaphor. The idea I'm trying to get into the mind is that we are consciously breaking at the end-to-end and openness to which the internet is most known for and which allows us to innovate. If we prevent ourselves from doing so, we prevent ourselves finding the solutions which we may need to move forward. Next question.
I'm sorry. If you have more questions, please come up to the mic here. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I'm eating a little bit of time. Perhaps just two more. Okay.
That was complicated. My name is Adrian Kinderis. I'm from Oz Registry International from Australia. Thank you so much for your presentation. I enjoyed it. I have a question for you. If I may, could you elaborate on your definition, if you like, of independence with respect to the conclusion of the JPA? Could you elaborate a little bit on that to give us some insight into where you see ICANN and how it could possibly be independent and where do you think it'll end up? Will we see a severance from the US government in totality or will we forever have Big Brother over our shoulder?
Okay. Deep question. I'm going to bound it, if I may, which is I'm going to talk about independence as I viewed it when when the whole ICANN process began. It's, I think, really not my position to talk about independence today. I'll let perhaps Doug deal into that. The thinking at the time was that the private sector was the best party is to innovate. Why? Because the private sector invested in the internet's development, does a lot of the innovation, et cetera, et cetera. And therefore, the thinking at the time was the private sector, i.e. the market, was the best way to move forward, and that the private sector, the market, be best described, best responsible for this part of the internet. Now, that was pre 9/11. Okay, that was obviously the role of governments and the celebration and of governments as a participant of the internet was also recognized subsequently. So, independence. The question is, independent from whom? And I believe that is a red herring question. Okay, the reason why I believe it's a red herring question is, well, currently the discussion is, well, if it's not going to be the US government, who is it going to be? Is it going to be the G12? Is it going to be the UN, et cetera, et cetera? In my mind, okay, those for you who are political, they love these questions, but from my perspective, I don't believe it's necessarily relevant. Relevant from a perspective of continued utility. If it's a question of independence or utility, what's more important? My own view is that it's more important that the internet keep evolving and be useful to people than it being so-called independent. Like what we have a saying in Hong Kong, we don't have democracy, but we're free. Okay. Independence in many ways of spirit and mind, you can talk about that, but there is the culture of the internet, which also predates all the ICANN, and in many ways, many of us who believe in this also view independence in those terms. So depending on who you talk to, independence means different things. For me, it means keeping the internet open end-to-end so that we can continue to innovate. Doesn't deal with governments.
So the if I may retort, the in your milestones that you had listed earlier, you had the JPA listed as when it was going to be expired, if you like.
Yeah, let me explain that, if I can.
Sure.
I didn't put that in originally, and then it sort of, for some people who follow ICANN closely, it's like you missed the elephant in the room for some people. So I put it in there to address that,
sure.
But it's not necessarily, I believe, it is something significant. We've had 10 years of JPAs. We've gone through 10 versions, 7 versions of the agreement. A lot of people are looking at, given the pre-discussions with WSIS and governments, et cetera. To me, I don't operate at that level. I'm not at the governments. I'm not privy to the discussion. And to me, it's not necessarily irrelevant, but what I value more is that we continue that the namespace is useful. And that's why I believe, if I was to have a priority, is that IDNs can't wait.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I think probably because of time, we will wrap up the morning session. We will have the, not the whole morning session, but the first part of the morning session. We have the coffee break outside.